Okay, well, hello. This is Jeff Gaudiosi, and you are on MisplacedStraws.com, where music comes to life. And my guest today recently started a U.S. tour that celebrates a few landmark anniversaries, not the least of which is his 50th year in this business. You may know him from his unforgettable work with the Scorpions, the guitar genius of his band Electric Sun, or his solo work. I'm proud to welcome Uli John Roth. Welcome, Uli.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Thank you. So I mentioned this is your 50th anniversary, but over the course of 2018 and 2019, you've been celebrating a few milestone anniversaries. Do you want to talk a little bit about those?
Yeah. We call this the triple anniversary tour because and 40 years ago, we recorded Tokyo Tapes, which was an important album for me, and it was also the basically my departure from the Scorpions in order to form Electric Sun, which was also 40 years ago. So that's really the three anniversaries. And then, yeah, you're right, the 50th anniversary means that in 1968, that's like in December 68, I played my first ever show when I was a teenager of 13. And I'm still at it.
It goes by quick, doesn't it? Now, after a few delays last year, you're finally kicking off the North American tour, which will be hitting the East Coast here at the end of April. Who do you have in your band with you this time around, and what can fans expect from the show?
With six people on stage, we have two guitar players aside from myself. They're both young virtuosos. They're excellent. They've been with me on virtually all of my previous recent American tours. That's David Kaczynski and Nicholas Torman, who also sings the lead vocals for a lot of the songs. Keyboards is Corbin Vaughn. He's been with me for a long time also. Drums, Richard Kirk. And bass is Nico Depesch. And, what can the audience expect? We're playing a long combined show. It's like a three-hour show every evening with a little intermission. It sounds like a lot, but it does go by rather quickly, and people seem to be very happy with this format. It basically reflects my 50 years in music, live music, and it's a little bit of a cross-section of some of my best work. But it was difficult to find the right program because I've got such a big repertoire, you know. So
exactly. There's a lot of music to pick from.
Yeah. So, of course, it does include some of the best early Scorpions stuff. Then a nice cross-section through Electric Sun, which we really haven't played for 40 years, so that's a bit of a rediscovery. Some Sky of Avalon, some tracks, and then Sky Guitar. I also do a 15-minute solo acoustic set on my 8-string flamenco Sky Guitar, and a little bit of Hendrix towards the end, you know, and that is it.
Sounds like a full
other
night.
Other than that, yeah, it is. And for the people who can't get enough, we're doing even an hour more because there's a VIP-only show in the late afternoon, which is devoted to my Metamorphosis Concerto, which is music that's based on Vivaldi's Four Seasons. And that's one of my favorite parts of the evening because I normally don't get to play that music, you know. And not only is that a real challenge, but also a lot of, it's very exhilarating to play that piece.
I would imagine. Now, going back to the beginning of your career, Michael Schenker left the Scorpions after the Lonesome Crow record, and you came in. What was your introduction to the band? How did you end up taking Michael's place?
Well, it was just really a phone call. Rudolph mm-hmm. called me and said, look, Michael has just left the band, and we have still one more show. It was a little festival, you know, mm-hmm. in Germany. Could I take Michael's place? And I said, yes. And we had one brief rehearsal. We played the show with basically the lineup from Lonesome Crow, or most of Lonesome Crow lineup. And it went very well. And that was that. And there were no more Scorpions after that, because after Michael left, the band really completely split apart, and there was only Rudolph left. So I invited Rudolph to some rehearsals with my band, Dawn Road, and he came and he liked what he saw and he started sitting in with us. And soon after that, we had a new band, you know. He effectively joined Dawn Road, but then Scorpions had a record deal. They were already a professional band, and we were like more like a high school amateur outfit. So it was a no-brainer. We called it Scorpions. And then we got Klaus Meiner back into the fold, and that was the end of the new beginning, you know. And the result was Flight of the Rainbow half a year later. And that was that. The rest is history.
And a glorious history it was. There's some incredible
Michael
music
really,
there.
Michael has really, sorry, to make the story a little bit more complete. Michael Schenker had already approached me whether I wanted to take his place in the Scorpions before that, you know, but he didn't really say that he was going to leave for UFO.
Right.
But I wasn't really so keen because I was only interested in classical music at that time. And I didn't really, it just didn't fit into my scheme of things, you know. But then when Rudolph called and when Rudolph and I got on so well, then it was a different matter, you know. I changed my mind and then that was it. So that's.
And then later on, as Tokyo Tapes was starting to break, you left the band and formed Electric Sun. What was your initial vision when you were leaving the Scorpions and going to Electric Sun? Were you looking for something completely different, or what was the thought?
Yes, something completely different. I wanted to be free to, you know, explore to my heart's content without having to be think, quote-unquote, in terms of commerciality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to be artistically free. And I was kind of free in the Scorpions in the sense that nobody told me ever what to do and what not to do. But we had a self-imposed framework with the band. You know, the band had found its own style and the audience liked it. So you tend to stay within that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Electric Sun was really my way of becoming more free musically and artistically. And that was the driving force, you know. It wasn't the commercial success. And I thought, had I put the commercial success before my artistic thinking, I would have stayed in the Scorpions. It was a clear thing. The band was destined for big success. Very unstoppable at that time, you know.
And you know, for me personally, Beyond the Astral Skies from Electric Sun was a game-changing record. It came out at a time when the shred guitar players were all the rage, and it was just something completely different that, you know, like I said, personally as a kid growing up, then just blew me away. Were you aware?
Wow, that's good to know.
You know? Were you aware or influenced by sort of that generation of shred guitar players? Because it seemed like you kind of stuck true to yourself and did your own thing while all that was going on around you.
I was aware of it. I was becoming aware of it, but I was not influenced because I was before that, and they were influenced by me, you know. So I was always skeptical about the shred thing. The term shred, I didn't like it at all. It means, you know, almost like typewriting. And a lot of these players ended up becoming, like, better typewriter players. I was very critical because melody was usually sacrificed on the altar of speed and cheap effects. And I didn't like that at all. When I, quote-unquote, did my type of shredding, it was always melodic and musically logical. So there was this justification for it, you know. And then later on, it became a bit of an epidemic. More and more people played more and more arpeggios up and down the fretboard, but in a pretty mindless fashion. There were a few who didn't. There were a few who created real music, you know. But on the whole, I thought it was kind of like a deplorable development, which didn't really add much to the quality of music.
Well, and I think the song got lost in that, whereas, you know, especially on Beyond the Astral Skies, to me, the song was always central to your playing, and, you know, your playing enhanced
that. Yeah, the music, the guitar playing had to go with that, of course, yes. But I'm glad you picked out that album, because it's by far my favorite Electric Sun album. But
oh,
it wasn't
great.
Necessarily the most popular, because it did go over people's heads. There were quite a few people who thought it was way too far out there, you know. And
I think that's why I like
so many
it.
Different colors and facets. Not everybody wanted that, you know. Some people thought I should be more rock-oriented, play harder, you know, but anyways, it was my favorite, and I put a lot of heart and soul into that album. And to this day, for me, some of these things stand the test of time. Not necessarily all of it, but some of it.
And in addition to
And we're playing quite a bit of it live now also, you know?
Oh, that's great to know. That's it would be interesting to hear a lot of that stuff that, you know, we haven't been able to hear in decades. And in addition to playing, you also have developed your own signature guitar, which, you know, aside from just being a beautiful instrument, it's a really unique instrument. Can you talk a little bit about the Sky Guitar?
The Sky Guitar came about in the early 80s as the result of my desire to play higher and notes in a higher range than was possible on a normal traditional electric guitar. You know, I tended to run out of frets quite frequently, and that happened even from as early as in trance. And a lot of broken strings were the result of that. So eventually, the Sky Guitar was created with that in mind, to be able to play much higher than on a standard guitar. And in order to make that possible, the shape needed to be altered. And I had to, in my mind, I had to find a shape that was aesthetically pleasing, but also practical.
Right.
And that's how the Sky Guitar came up, you know. And, yeah, I've played them ever since, and they've undergone a lot of changes, but the changes were more of a subtle nature because the overall shape is still the same, but they now have an infinite array of possibilities, like the new Sky Guitars have onboard effects. They have an extremely powerful and versatile pickup system called MegaWing. Some of them even have two independent pickup systems. And they can do all sorts of things that standard guitars cannot. So for me, they're dream machines. And in 2017, I founded my own little company called UJR Sky Guitars. So we're selling them on the internet to order. And there's like a one-year waiting list because they're all hand-built. And it takes a long time to complete all the orders. But there's a small but growing community in the world of people who love Sky Guitars. And some already have two, three, four, one guy, now even six Sky Guitars.
Wow.
With prices of up to $20,000, $30,000. That's quite something.
It's a high-end guitar.
That's kind of a thing for some people, yes.
And now, a lot of your contemporaries, once they get around their 50th anniversary, start contemplating their farewell tour. I think even the Scorpions have done one or two. Has the idea of retirement ever crossed your mind?
No. I will retire in my bootsteps when I can't walk or talk anymore or play anymore. If that is the case, I'll retire. Before that, it is like the most unlikely scenario you could put in front of me. You know, being mentally and emotionally and spiritually active is what drives me, you know. And, yeah, what would I do in retirement? It's an impossible thought. I need to be creative, go forward and do something, you know. Meet people, talk to people. You know, look at the dogs in the park. I'm here in Canada. It's a beautiful sunlit day. Sitting on a bench, there's a huge river, Thompson River, and there's a big congregation of dogs with their owners, and they're chasing after the balls into the river, down the sand dunes. It's fascinating. You see their excitement at chasing these balls, and they're so good at it. There's this black dog. Whenever the owner, they've got these slingshots, so he shoots them like 60 yards or something like that, and then this black dog is chasing after it in a gallop like there's no tomorrow. In the end, he sees that ball while it's still running. I don't know how he does it, because I couldn't even see the ball, but gulps it up with one big, totally accurate bite, and then drags it into the water to wash it off, and then brings it back tail waggingly to its owner. It's just cool. I've been sitting here for, throughout the interview, and it's just ever so cool. It's nice to have an off day every once in a while.
Yes, it is. Now,
anyways, we're in Kamloops, Canada.
Now, you've gone back and played with the Scorpions a couple times over the years. Is that something that you think maybe in the future, a one-off show again somewhere? Or is it, have you kind of moved on now and closed that chapter and doing your own thing completely?
Well, there was a period when we did that quite regularly in the 2000s, you know, 2005 to 2011. But then once they started their farewell tour, we didn't do it anymore, other than there was one show in Tokyo a few years back, which was more accidental because I happened to be there and they happened to be there at that festival. Having said that, Rudolf was on my stage just recently in Japan. I invited him to come to the 50th anniversary show at Sun Plaza. Mm-hmm. And he did. And we had a blast. We played quite a few early Scorpion songs. We even recorded it. I think we're going to have a DVD of that particular event. Mm-hmm. So that was cool. And I wouldn't be surprised if something like that happens in the future. As for playing with the Scorpions live, I don't know. Nothing is planned. And they have their agenda. They're doing their shows. you know, guests don't really fit into it these days, I guess.
And there's been a lot of tension over the years.
I'm always touring also.
Yeah, exactly. You're always on the road.
Yeah.
Now, there's been a lot of tension over the years between Michael and Rudolph. Have you ever gotten stuck in the middle of that? It seems that, you know, when you've gone back to play with them, it's always been Rudolph.
I'm not stuck in the middle. I think this developed like maybe not too long ago, and it's just this is coming from Michael's side because Rudolph doesn't bear any grudges, and Rudolph is the coolest guy you could imagine. Virtually all of what Michael says doesn't make any sense to me regarding this. I just don't understand it.
Yeah.
And having known Rudolph closely for 5 years, it's almost as if Michael is talking about a different person. And I still know Rudolph, and I still think Michael is talking about a different person. Maybe Rudolph has some alter Jekyll and Hyde ego that I don't know of, but I don't think it exists. I don't know what Michael Steele is there. I can't really comment on that other than that I think it's very sad to talk about like that about your brother. I wouldn't talk about anybody like that. Even if it was true, I don't understand the negativity. It's not very becoming. I just don't understand it, and I don't think Rudolph deserves it. As far as I know, Rudolph always did good for Michael. That was just my personal perception. And no offense to Michael, he's one of the greatest guitar players that ever that the world has ever seen, and particularly one of the most unique. And I respect him for that, you know. But this other thing is something that just leaves me dumbfounded and pretty speechless. I don't know where it's coming from, and I wish it would just go away because it's not doing Michael any good to be seen as somebody who's like talking badly about his brother, you know. Mm-hmm. And also, let's not forget, yes, Michael is the much better guitar player technically and more versatile musician, but Rudolph wrote some amazing hit songs, which were musically on a very high level, and that's not an accident, you know.
No.
That's a special gift, and very few people have that. That should not be underestimated in any way. Yeah. Yeah. Rudolph is a real artist, too, you know.
Definitely,
and
without
a
doubt.
Nobody should take that away from him.
And the last question for today, we recently just had the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony in New York last Friday. Have you ever given any thought as to, you know, whether or not the Scorpions should be in and you'll be part of that? I know the fans are always
I've not given any thought to it. It's not up to me. It's just I was asked this question recently in an interview, and I said, well, I don't understand why they're not in it. They should be in it. They're, for me, clearly one of the most important rock bands of all time, easily, like in the top 10.
Yeah.
And so I don't understand the policy of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Although I went there, they invited me for a guided tour, and they were very, very nice. And they did a really nice Jimmy exhibit there. So I didn't, you know, talk about their policies. There's probably people up in some committee or whatever. The feeling that I got is very much geared to American bands, which is fine because rock and roll comes from America. It doesn't come from England. You know,
right.
England made a different form of music popular, which was influenced by rock and roll and blues, but then England came with its own brand starting with the Beatles, you know, and all the other bands, and then going into the second generation with Deep Purple, Yes, Sabbath, and of course Led Zeppelin, and yeah, so maybe that's what it is, you know, maybe it's rock and roll, you know, and these bands, these English bands that we're talking about, Scorpions, it's not really a rock and roll band, is it? Although we used to play long time Sally as an encore once. You know, so well, we're not really a rock and roll band. In that sense, maybe they shouldn't even be there.
Well, hopefully one day they will. And thank you
well,
so
whatever.
Much for your
you know
thank you so much for your time. I encourage everybody go online, check out Uli's website. All of his tour dates are there. This tour goes on for quite a while. You'll be hitting the East Coast at the end of April, but you have dates, I believe, through the fall. So plenty of opportunity to catch just a legendary guitar player playing some amazing songs. So, Uli, thank you so much. It's been great getting to talk to you, and hopefully I can catch you when you get out east here.
Yeah, come on in and say hi.
I definitely will.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Thank you so much.
And, yeah. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.